Welcome to Sounding Off with Kim Munson. This is our new podcast. On the line with me is Pam Long. She is a former Army captain. She served with the Army Medical Service Corps, graduate from West Point. She's written a very interesting piece that you can find at coloradohealthchoice.org. And it says, the Colorado COVID-19 data indicates viral ARC peak passed on April 3rd, 2020. Pam Long, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Kim.
This is a very important piece with excellent research that you have written, Pam. So where should we start with this?
Well, my paper includes three main points. The overview of it is all based on the Colorado COVID data that anyone can access on the website. So three main points. The context. We compare COVID, coronavirus 19, to the current influenza hospitalization rates. Secondly, we look at the data itself, the hospitalizations and the non-hospitalizations is what we are comparing in this paper, and where we are in the viral cycle, which shows a decline. And then lastly, the third part is the greater consequence, even greater than the virus itself, are deaths of despair. So those are the three main points of the paper.
Okay, so let's start with the context. What did you find out as you were researching this paper, Pam Long?
So currently there are, as of April 13th, 2020, there are 1,493 COVID hospitalizations in the state of Colorado. In comparison, there have been in this 2019-2020 influenza season, 3,458 influenza hospitalizations. So if you want to compare coronavirus in Colorado to influenza, coronavirus is only 43% the magnitude of hospitalization rates compared to influenza. And why is that comparison important? These are both respiratory viruses, and yet the state is directing these unprecedented quarantines, mask wearing, stay-at-home orders for coronavirus, but not similar measures for influenza. And in fact, we'll get to it later in the article, that 2017-2018 influenza season had a much higher death rate than either the current influenza season here in Colorado and the coronavirus. So we had a bigger problem in 2017 and 2018 by the numbers than we do right now, but we have unprecedented restrictions on freedom.
Okay, so now, once again, where did you find these numbers? Where did you base this data?
The two main data sources that I use to compare are on the CDPHE, that's our health department, their COVID-19 case data, and I provide a link in my paper. And then I also looked at the CDC's historical records for, they categorize influenza along with pneumonia. And this is really the entire category of cyclical respiratory viruses in the United States. And there's also a link to that in my paper.
Okay, so you are using the government numbers as you are dissecting all this. So I think that's important that people understand that. So continue on. What's the next thing within this context that people need to know?
Okay, so part two, we start to look at the actual data. So I think the public is getting confused between models and data. There's real data, which I explain in graph and chart in my article, and there's models. So first I just want to address the data. The data shows, when you break it down by a daily case count of hospitalizations and just overall cases of coronavirus in Colorado, which is different than what is posted on the CDPHE COVID-19 website. They are posting cumulative data. So this gets a little, data technical, nerdy, but when you have cumulative data, you can't identify when the viral arc peak starts to decline. It just will, the arc of a cumulative graph will just keep increasing forever. So that's not really useful data to decide when did we hit the peak and when can we resume our lives, our normal routines. So I provide the daily data extracted from the cumulative data from the government, but it's being shared publicly. And if you do that, you will see that we hit our peak, our viral arc peak, on April 2nd. And then you see a decline from April 2nd. And that is the historical viral trend of any virus, that it has a slow upward smooth curve, and then it hits a peak, and it comes down inevitably in a decline. And I talk about in my paper some of the conjecture about a second wave or a second surge. That is not viral normalcy. If you look even at the historical trends from the CDC, typical respiratory viruses peak around week 10, and that is around March 2nd in the United States in our climate. And then there is this very predictable, what mathematicians would call a sine wave, where it bottoms out in the summer in those warm temperatures where everyone is getting lots of sunshine and vitamin D to boost our immune system. And then you start to see the sine curve oscillate upward again in the winter months. There is no precedent for a naturally occurring virus, respiratory virus, in the United States or any other country, that it would have this irregular pattern that goes against the sine wave. So we've already seen the top of the peak of the virus, and we already see it's declining. And it's interesting because yesterday the Denver Post published a graph of our COVID data, and it's clearly showing a decline in the virus, and they're calling it a plateau. It is not a plateau, but I digress. So the other interesting highlights I make in the data to help people understand, there is an outlier. There's an outlier on April 8th. And this is the day after Dr. Birx from the White House Task Force announced to the nation that every death in the U.S. would now be coded as a COVID death. And what she has done basically is skewed all the COVID data. So if you come into a hospital and have a heart attack, that is coded as a COVID death. If you come into the hospital for any reason, any pre-existing condition, that is now coded as a COVID death. And anecdotally, I have heard from medical examiners, and this is something the public can call their county coroners and ask, are you coding death post-mortem as COVID death? Because anecdotally, I've heard that yes, we are. And that is in alignment with the CDC guidance to do so, to test post-mortem and to code as COVID death. So that includes suicides, murders, in alignment with the CDC data. So we will see very skewed data from here on out from April 8th, and we will see just a more liberal approach than other countries have taken as far as staying with good data, keep your data definitions the same. You don't change your data definitions mid-outbreak. That is inherently poor data analysis. It completely undermines your validity and your reliability in the data. And okay, I also point that, out, go ahead.
Well, that really is concerning. I miss that Dr. Birx said that. And so from a layman's terms, what you're saying is that the definition or what is being put on death certificates can now, all these different things could be noted as COVID-19. Is that because if they actually do a test after death and they had COVID-19, is that how they're coming up with that, Pam?
Potentially, yes. So if you test a body postmortem for COVID-19, they can test positive. So dying with COVID-19 is not the same as dying as a result of COVID-19. If your body tests positive for the antibodies, meaning maybe you had it recently and you recovered, and then you have a heart attack or a suicide or any, pre-existing condition, Did you die of COVID-19 because the antibodies are in your body, or did you die of the heart attack or suicide? So you can see where this is going to inherently flaw all of our data for this virus. And there was a very public case in Connecticut, I believe, where a child died of suffocation, and it was coded as a COVID death, you know, alleging that now children and infants are dying of COVID-19, where that is, children have very low risk for this virus. It's the elderly with coexisting comorbid conditions that have the highest susceptibility for this virus. So you see how the data being skewed in this way is promoting fear and irrational conclusions.
Well, and this inflation of these numbers then are used by politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties that have been very interested in stomping down on really the rights of everyday people that are enshrined within the Bill of Rights and the Constitution, the right of assembly, the freedom of speech, the freedom to move around. So if you have the basically the definition changed, which apparently that happens, you said, around April 8th. So that changes, it changes the whole ballgame on that. And then it will inflate the numbers that are then used to scare the public into giving up, I think, many of their freedoms, Pam.
Absolutely. And also contributing to this, it's actually incentivized to skew the data, because what happens is that our federal government incentivized with a stimulus fund hospitals to treat anyone with a pre-existing condition as a COVID-19 case. So anyone can come into a hospital for a heart issue, a serious medical issue that's uninsured, and receive free treatment. So that's why you see this huge spike on April 8th in the Colorado data. You have code everything as a COVID death and get, you know, federal stimulus funding, millions of dollars for treating anyone that comes in your door of your hospitals encoded as a COVID case. So that we've been financially incentivized and approved to code everything as a COVID death, even people who have died of other things that we're testing post-mortem. And I would only add to that, talking about the data, the other big point I make in the article is that Governor Polis acted in extreme caution on March 26th when the first social distancing policy went into place. We were on an upward trend, still nothing compared to influenza in our state. But then he extended it on April 6th, and the data shows we were already in a decline for this virus by April 3rd. And so as of yesterday in his press conference, he and other state governors are talking about, no, life businesses will not reopen. The word he used was highly unlikely on April 26th. And, you know, other states are talking about extending the stay-at-home orders in the shelter-in-place orders, what people refer to as lockdowns, rightfully so. You could make a case that the data does not justify this unprecedented move on civil liberties, and that stay-at-home and shelter-in-place are just nice ways to say house arrest.
Well, definitely. So a couple of things going on here then, my friends, is that we are seeing through redefining what can be put as the cause of death is very possibly going to inflate those numbers. And then also there's the financial incentive. And, you know, I think we would hope that everybody is on the up and up on this, but we're realizing whenever you have power and money involved, then the incentives can get skewed. And Pam Long, from an anecdotal standpoint, you know, we really work to source three times if we hear a story. But I was actually talking to a friend of mine who has a friend in a different state that is a nurse, and she trusts her friend very much. And she said her friend is being asked to put COVID-19 on death certificates when she knows that that is not the case. And her friend is having a real moral dilemma on whether or not she should continue working as a nurse or quit because she's is being told to do something that really goes against her character. So if that's happening in one place, I bet that's happening in other places as well. And so we need to shed light on this data. A friend of mine recently said regarding modeling and data, garbage in, garbage out. So you put garbage in, that's what you're going to get out. And then you could see politicians and bureaucrats and interested parties using this, using the power of these numbers to continue to scare people to control us. So continue on, Pam Long. What's the next thing that our listeners should know?
Well, continue on with the third major concern in my paper. And then I do want to address how the public can be good consumers and critical consumers of these models that are being presented in the press conferences by the governor. So first, my greater concerns, and I conclude in my paper that we don't have evidence in the data that hospitals are at any risk of being overwhelmed. We are in a decline, both with cases and hospitalization rates. But the stay-at-home order, for every 1% increase in unemployment, the U.S. will suffer 58,000 deaths of despair. Deaths of despair is established. It has been for several decades. And they are when there's a big crash in the economy, you see a rise in heart attacks, suicide, liver disease as a result of alcoholism, and deaths associated with criminal activity and things like that. So 58,000 deaths of despair far exceeds the current U.S. 42,000 deaths from COVID-19. And that's just for 1% increase in unemployment. We have a projected 32% unemployment rate. We've already lost 7 million jobs in the U.S. And that is projected to reach 14 million by June 2020. So we are looking at, because I know the criticism of anyone speaking about COVID-19 compared to civil liberties is that we don't care that people are dying. I do care about people dying. That was my job in the military, is to keep our soldiers safe. And for me to be effective with the soldiers I served, the nation I served, my commanders, I could not bring them models. I had to bring them evidence of the risk. And right now we have overwhelming evidence that the risk of deaths of despair are greater under the stay-at-home order than the virus itself. And so along with that, I just want to compare COVID-19 to influenza again. The annual acceptable death rate in the U.S. for influenza is up to 60,000 people every year. And you don't hear daily updates about it. It's tracked very well by the CDC. We are nowhere close to that with influenza this year. We are nowhere close to that with COVID-19. Why is this year different? Why are we fear-mongering with daily updates on we're now around 300 deaths in Colorado for COVID-19. Why? That's what I want people to ask. Why is this different when the magnitude is nowhere to be compared with the annual influenza death?
So, Pam Long, when you ask yourself why, what do you come up with?
Well, you know, here's kind of my journey with this virus. So I started to get a little red flag, if you will, when the governor asked for 7,000 ventilators back in March, a month ago. That was my moment of something is either he's getting very poor advice or something else is going on here, some type of financial incentive. Right, because asking for 7,000 ventilators from, I'm speaking as a former medevac commander, is like telling the public, we need 7,000 life flights today. The numbers, even today, a month later, do not justify a request of 7,000 ventilators. So then I thought, well, maybe this is some type of logistical, financial request where you ask the government for 7,000 ventilators and they provide you a check and then you spend that money however you want medically for your state. I don't know. But that's where I started with my journey of something is not right with what we're telling the public. If we're, you know, I don't know the motivation, but something is not right. So that's what led me to, you know, let's look at the real numbers, which is a good segue into when you hear about models. The models have been flawed up to the models the CDC was using, no longer is using, from the Imperial College London was off by a factor of 2,500. So 2,500%. The model that our governor was quoted as using from the state health officials was off by a factor of 100. It predicted 30,000 deaths. We have 300 deaths. So the models we have been using are flawed. They have invalid assumptions about the virulence or the severity of this virus and the transmission. So let's talk about models and how to criticize, because the governor introduced another model yesterday during his press conference, Tuesday, April 14th. And this model, it has no validity or liability. He's talking about using a model based on percentages of social distancing. This is a new term. This is abstract. It's not measurable. It hasn't been normed or validated. So for people who don't love data like I do, so let's compare it to an IQ test or an SAT test. Those tests have huge impact on the trajectory of people's lives. And because they do, they go through a peer-reviewed norming process where they are validated and to show validity and reliability on what we would call a standard bell curve. And so if you give it these tests or use these models to evaluate intelligence or aptitude, that they are the same across the board in every part of your geography, your nation, your state. So, for example, one of the big flaws historically of our IQ testing was that it included farming equipment questions, which people who live in urban inner city areas had no familiarity with. So that is an outlier question or topic because it doesn't truly measure their intelligence. Likewise, these models that Governor Polis is using, I haven't seen any of the assumptions that go into these models, but I'm starting to believe, because they have not been validated, normed, peer-reviewed, that someone in Denver has not taken in all the interests of people living in the rural areas. Social distancing in rural areas of our state, mountain areas, is not the same as social distancing in Denver. So when the president or when the governor stands up and says, I'm using this conceptual model that says, you know, the next 5 days, we will see if this percentage of social distancing has the plateau effect that we are looking for to determine if you can resume your normal life and reopen your business and start earning an income again, I say that is highly irresponsible, and the public needs to have huge outcry about it. These are someone's model. I don't know whose model, but they're not normed or validated. And that's just irresponsible leadership. And I'm not a supporter of Governor Polis, and I'm not a detractor, but I just find it very concerning, another red flag, that our governor is using some model that has not been validated.
And I think that it's irresponsible leadership to not be starting to assure people that we're going to get these businesses back open and that we're going to let people start to get back to work and to take care of their friends and their take care of their families. And so I think it's irresponsible to use modeling that is not valid, to use that as an excuse to, he's implying that we're going to stay closed after April 26th, or that kind of seems like what he's getting set up here. Pam, your thoughts?
Yesterday, his press conference had so many red flags in it for me as a citizen of Colorado. I'm referring to his press conference on April 14th, that I guess I'll just summarize the most concerning. One, that he's using this model and to the public, which has a facade of science behind it, but does not. So maybe people are watching saying, oh, look, there's a graph. He knows he's getting good advice. He knows what he's doing. He's citing percentages. That is not the case, and I'm not trying to be make this politicize this, but you have to, when you hear him talking to this model that he's using, this conceptual model, you need to think of the emperor wears no clothes. So no one is advising him, apparently, that this is not a valid model. This is not evidence-based. That's what an intelligent advisor would say. You cannot use this model to require people to stay at home indefinitely. That is not responsible leadership. It would not pass the peer review cycle. And we're basing our entire economy on it. My other concerns from his press conference yesterday were he repeatedly referred to sustainability 30 times at least. And nowhere in this press conference did I hear a hint of public input or democracy. So as a consumer, I would advise you, as a critical consumer, when you hear sustainability, this new buzzword from the governor, to think that is the replacement for the democratic process. He is talking about a 3 to 10 month plan, 3-phase plan, that of businesses being slowly in a staggered priority fashion able to reopen with no public input on those priorities or that timeline. So again, step back and think what has happened. With a wipe of his pen, he shut everything down. But now we need a committee or a task force or a study or this slow staggered process to reopen everything. Why not just another wipe of the pen, Governor? That's a good, valid question. You know, we close it down, let's open it back up. Because the model you're using is invalid and the data says we're on a decline. My other concern from his press conference yesterday, he kept referring to repeatedly these phrases of life will be different. Life will not, there's a new normal. There's a new, it won't be like what it was before. He had about 4 to 6 catchphrases about really there's a new way of doing things in our state. That is overreach. And I'm leaning towards unconstitutional based on what we've seen so far. So I would challenge that. This is not a dictatorship. This is a constitutional republic with a constitution. That is very concerning to me that he is going to exercise that type of power, telling us don't expect things to go back to normal really ever. We have a new way of life now. And then ultimately his 3 to 10 month plan involves life won't go back to normal until there's a vaccine or a cure. Well, we already have treatment for viruses. There's never a cure for viruses. This is astounding. Viruses are cyclical. They come back in the winter months. They peak. They go away in the summer months. So we have very established, I can tell you from the military, we've been using chloroquine, the anti-malarial, antiviral drug, for over so many years, so effectively. So either, the government has been using this off-label in an irresponsible way for, 70 years, or it's effective. And it's even more effective when you use it combined with zinc, which is stops virus replication. So in summary, my major concerns from his April 14th press conference are that he is basing our stay-at-home order, the extension of it, which he has already said is most likely going to happen through May, an unknown indefinite time, is based on a model that is not validated or shown to have any type of reliability. Then his repeated mentions of life will not go back to the way we knew it. There's a new normal. Life will be different, not the same, a new sense of normalcy. Is very concerning to me as an infringement on our constitutional rights and the lack of democratic process. And, his just very bold statements that sports will not have fans in stadiums this summer. Businesses will not reopen on April 27th. He's using the term unlikely. So I guess that's to so people have hope that it could happen. But everything he's saying is, in summation, is that life is not going back to normal based on his task force and the invalidated model that he's using.
Well, and one other thing, you had made an observation when he was asked about people snitching on their neighbors or his tyrannical orders. What was your read on that, Pam Long?
Well, I mean, it is a legitimate concern that, you know, people are snitching on their neighbors and the culture we're creating for people just to exercise their constitutional rights, right to assemble, right to free speech, right to worship, right to labor, which is included in the right to property. And he was very defensive and emotional and, it came off to me as a bit of political theater. The questioner asked, said that he's hearing feedback from his people in his county that it's Nazi-like. And instead of the governor saying, something based on the data, he instead took it as a personal attack because he has Jewish descent. And said that Nazism and this virus has no comparison to the Holocaust. But I think if you looked at the overall intent of the question, it was to address people's backlash. And instead of addressing people's backlash to what could be viewed as overreach of our constitutional rights, very validly, instead he says, look, you violate the stay-at-home order, people will die. And wow, as again, going back to the data, the country of Sweden does not have a stay-at-home order, and they have very similar case numbers and trend graphs that we do. So to say if you don't stay at home, then people will die is not an evidence-based response. It's an emotional response. And so you can either interpret it however you want, But I'd like to see leadership that has evidence-based responses.
Okay. Hey, Pam Long, this has just been an excellent podcast. I greatly appreciate it. This piece that you've written is at Colorado Health Choice Alliance. That's coloradohealthchoice.org. And Pam Long, you know what you're talking about. You're a former Army captain. You studied at West Point. You served in the Army Medical Service Corps. Thank you so much. So this is Kim Munson sounding off with Kim Munson, and stay tuned for more podcasts.